As I said this morning, I just thought we'd spend a little bit of time. I figured we kind of have a core group. I don't know if that's a good term or not, but that's just the reality of it. But what I'm going to do is lay out some things, go over some issues, and then I'm going to pause periodically and give you a chance to make your comments. It's been my experience, not only because this maybe is a timely subject, Sunday afternoon, if you have a little bit of opportunity to participate, it helps keep your eyelids toward the upper part of your eye rather than the lower part of the eye, although for some of you that is pretty much an impossibility. I understand that. Okay. But it is hard. We had a good meal, soft seats. The genesis for this came about 2 years ago. I was asked by a congregation in Iowa to present a lesson on this. And because they had had a conversation in one of their adult classes, not a contentious one, but one of the members said he didn't think he could serve as a policeman because he might be required to shoot somebody. And others talked about, well, they could. And it was a, as I understand it, a congenial discussion, but they said, okay, would you talk a little bit about that when you come? So I did, and I talked about the things we're going to talk about. And there was probably about 40 of us there, and I didn't give it any thought. After church, at least three people came up and told me they were packing. Packing means carrying a gun. And I thought, whoa, I hope they liked my lesson. But the next week I was somewhere else, and so Sunday afternoon I said, well, we'll do this again. There was only about 17 of us there. And at least two of the people out of 17 were packing. And interestingly enough, one was about a 30-year-old married man. The other one was about a 75-year-old widow lady who lived out a little bit out of town. And she had it. And I'm not talking glove compartment. I'm talking purse and pocket. So I've done this several places, and I have yet to go to a place where somebody wasn't packing. Now, I don't know for a fact, but I'd almost tell you somebody this morning, or multiple people this morning, were packing. We didn't know it. They make them so that it looks like a wallet in your pocket for men, and of course in a purse, you're not going to see it. So I thought, well, that's just interesting. About 2 months ago, Donna and I were in Bloomfield, Indiana, and we talked about this with them. That happened to be the very Sunday that later I found out, a few hours later, had the killings in Kentucky. And then, of course, as I mentioned this morning, we had that tragedy in Texas, and I don't know how many others, but those are the two that are kind of on my mind. So with that, let me go through, I'm going to give you some of the questions or topics I'm going to touch on as time permits, and I'm going to pause after each one and give you a chance for comments. You do not have to agree with me. I had a conversation with someone after the morning service, because they knew I was going to talk about this, who wasn't going to be able to be here, or chose not to be here. But they take a quite different position on some of these things than I do, and that's fine. We're not going to all agree on this. And we have to use our best judgment. But the questions I was asked to address and I bring with me today is killing ever acceptable for a Christian? How can you reconcile turning the other cheek with going to war and killing someone? Can we pray for justice and yet love our enemies at the same time? If a Christian goes to war or law enforcement, he may be forced to kill a fellow believer. Does that preclude a Christian from such duties? Can a Christian support capital punishment and yet preclude his involvement? And then some of these are going to lead into the appropriateness or inappropriateness of Christians carrying concealed weapons. Now, I'm going to take about a minute and give you my disclaimers. Most of you probably know these things. I did not serve in the military. I know we've got multiple people here this afternoon who did. I grew up, like many of you, in the Vietnam War era. I happened to be in college, student deferment. I think it was maybe my junior or sophomore year in college, they had the lottery. And I just, by luck of the draw, got a high number, which means you weren't going to be drafted, but you could join. And I know a lot of people did join. I didn't at that point and went ahead and finished my college. By the time I got out of college, the war was winding down. The draft was being kind of done away with. So long story short, I never served in the military. Had I been drafted or had I been needed, I would have. I did not serve in the military because I thought it was wrong to serve in the military. To be quite honest with you, I probably didn't serve in the military because I've always thought the military would be a wonderful experience. I just didn't want to give up 2 years of my life for that wonderful experience. And some of you did, and that's great. I have owned guns. I don't own any right now. I've never owned a pistol. I've had a shotgun and a rifle, and somehow I lost them in one of our moves. I'm not sure how you lose shotguns in a move, but I think I left it in the attic. I went back, and they said they never found it, which means they probably found it and are enjoying it. I used to hunt. I don't hunt anymore, but that's not because of a moral problem with hunting. I waste my time doing other things than hunting. So that's where I'm coming from, or that's my background. Okay, I'm going to take these not in the order I read them, but I'm going to talk about capital punishment first of all. And there are people who feel very strongly about each one of these issues. And capital punishment isn't a gun issue per se, but it is a life and death, obviously, issue per se. Well, in Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, God gives us probably the only commandment that man has consistently kept. He tells us to be fruitful and multiply. And man has generally not kept that commandment because of his desire to be obedient. He just enjoys that process. But when I go to Genesis chapter 9, and I know this is simply a review for many of you, we find a very similar exhortation given to Noah after the flood that God had given to Adam earlier, when in chapter 9, God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. Because both Adam in the Garden of Eden and Noah after the flood, the earth was not populated. But for the comments on capital punishment in verse 5 and 6 of this ninth chapter, God says, surely your blood of your lives will I require, at the hand of every beast will I require it, and at the hand of man, at the hand of every man's brother will I require it. Whoso sheddeth man's blood by man shall be shed, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. In other words, we are in the image of God, and God considers that precious. And killing a person, God says there, would be grounds for having that person killed, which I would call capital punishment. Things have changed in terms of governments since then. Now, I personally believe capital punishment is an acceptable choice if the government or society, in a legal sense, opts to do that. Obviously, that's different than us taking vengeance into our own hands. That turns into murder. Now, do we have to have capital punishment? No, I don't know that we have to have it. There are some states and some countries, but there used to, well, probably still varying states, and Missouri's been back and forth. I think we've got it now. And if a society decides they don't want to have capital punishment, I don't know that I consider that to be a mortal sin. But I do think the Lord says it's an appropriate punishment. There's arguments about, is it a deterrent or not? Well, it is for me. I don't have an appeal to kill somebody, but not wanting to be killed would be a deterrent, and there's some reason God put it in here. Now, where I have to try to be careful, and I'm not sure I've accomplished this, is that I don't be hypocritical. Having said I believe it's okay, would I be the one that wants to pull the lever or drop the pellets? Well, the honest answer is, no, I don't want to be the one to pull the lever or drop the pellets. But if I believe it's okay, I ought to be willing to do that. Otherwise, I'm asking somebody else to do my dirty work for me. I've obviously never had to do that. Probably none of you will ever have to do that. And I'm not going to volunteer to do that. But if that was my task, I guess I would like to think I would step up to the plate. But that would be a very emotional, difficult thing to do, even though I intellectually think it's an okay thing. I mean, I think it's a biblical concept. Now, some people would look at this passage in Genesis 9 and say, well, that's in the Old Testament. We're under the new law. That is true. This is the Old Testament, but it's not the old law. This was given much before the law of Moses was given. I believe that there are really three elements to God's law in the Old Testament. There is a ceremonial part that we find in the law of Moses. Ceremonial would be the sacrifices, the feasts, the priesthood. There is a civil component to the law of Moses because it really was a civil organization as well as a spiritual organization. And then there was the moral component. Well, today, our religion has the ceremonial and the moral. The ceremonial would be, for instance, the Lord's Supper. They didn't have that in the Old Testament. They had different ceremonies they went through, but I consider the Lord's Supper a ceremonial type of a thing. But I don't believe God's moral law ever changed. The ceremonial and the civil components of God's law have changed over the ages. Today, we live under the civil laws of our government, not under the civil laws of the law of Moses. But murder was always wrong, whether it was patriarchal, mosaical, or Christian. Stealing was always wrong. Adultery was always wrong. Lying was always wrong. And you can see that in the book of Genesis before we ever get to the law of Moses. So I think God is consistent morally, and I think this idea of killing, or in this case capital punishment, is a moral concept that I don't believe it's ever changed. And I don't believe stealing has ever changed. It was always wrong. God's morality doesn't change because God is holy, as we just sang. This concept of the sanctity of life that is very, very important, and it's why I think God sanctions capital punishment, is the same concept that makes me against abortion and euthanasia. If it wasn't for the sanctity of life, euthanasia makes a lot of sense to me. Some people just get old and they're no longer productive, so, and please, I don't mean this, but get rid of them. Well, that's wrong because of the sanctity of life. We don't play God. But if I didn't believe in the sanctity of life, I wouldn't be against abortion and I wouldn't be against euthanasia. I do believe in the sanctity of life, so I am against those things. That's the guiding principle. Okay, time's going to get away from me, and I don't want it to. I'm going to pause here and see if anybody has a comment or question on the capital punishment thing. You don't feel obligated. I'm just giving you an opportunity. Okay. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 13, in the Decalogue, thou shalt not murder in the King James. The term murder there is the Hebrew word rasha. I'm sorry, in the King James it says, thou shalt not kill. And the Hebrew term there is rasha, which really carries the idea of murder. And what that commandment says, and I think you know this, it says, thou shalt not murder. It couldn't mean thou shalt not kill, because the God turns right around and sends his armies repeatedly in the Old Testament in, and there's a lot of blood in the Old Testament, but that's different than murder, and we'll get into. So the idea of killing a person per se is not necessarily automatically wrong, although I don't want to do it. I would prefer not to participate in that. But it's murder. It's that premeditated taking the person's life into your own hands and you making the decision whether they live or die in that sense. In Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 11, there is an interesting phrase. It says, because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. To me, that is a statement of the punishment can keep people from maybe doing the crime. And if there isn't appropriate punishment for the crime, it simply encourages people to do the crime. While I'm here in Exodus, and before I pause one more time, I want to look at Exodus chapter 22, verses 2 and 3. Because one of the questions we have to face is, okay, if we can't murder, is there ever a time when we can kill? Well, we'll talk about war in just a minute. But in Exodus chapter 22, verses 2 and 3, it says, and I read, if a thief be found breaking in and is smitten that he die, no blood shall be shed for him. In other words, if somebody's breaking into your house and they are smitten and they die, you're not held accountable for that. Okay. Verse 3 is more difficult for me, but I'll tell you about the best I can do with it. It then says, if the sun be risen upon him, There shall be blood shed for him. So he seems to be making maybe a distinction between if the thief breaks in at night versus breaks in during the day. If he breaks in at night and you kill him, you're not held accountable. One interpretation of verse 3 is if he breaks in during the day, you are. And if that is what it is saying, it may be meaning that in the daytime you should be able to see him better and not be startled and be able to make better judgments. But I think another way to interpret verse 3 when it says, if the sun be risen upon him, it may mean if someone breaks into your house and you capture them and then daylight comes, a time has passed and you've got them captured or subdued, then you don't have the right to go kill them because that would be taking the law into your own hands. And I think that may be a more likely scenario here. But if someone is breaking into their house back then, and to protect themselves in their house, it seems to me that the law of Moses gave them the right to protect, give them the right of self-defense in that scenario. And again, I consider that part of the moral law, which I don't know has changed. So I personally believe that if someone is breaking into our house and, to protect ourselves, God forbid, they lose their life at our hands, I think we have that right for self-defense. I hope that's not just my heart talking, and I hope it's my head also talking. There is a law in Missouri and probably in most states. It's called, I wrote it down here just a minute, Castle, thank you, the Castle Law, which means if someone intrudes into your property uninvited, legally, I'm not talking biblically, legally you have the right to protect yourself and kill them. Now, if you invite them in, you don't have the right. So you can't say, okay, I don't like Tom anymore, so I'm going to invite him over, and as soon as he sets foot on my land, I'm going to shoot him. That doesn't cut it, okay? But there is the Castle Law that is part of Missouri for sure, and I suspect it's in some form part of all states, laws of all states. So I think, and I don't think I'm probably on the same page with almost all of you, that to protect our homes, protect our families, we do have the right. I don't own a gun. And right now that's intentional because I don't necessarily trust my own. It's not my judgment. It's my, I don't know that I handle fire. I just think it's as likely I would shoot somebody I don't want to shoot than I would shoot somebody I do want to shoot and I don't want to go there. So if someone breaks into our house, I just tell Donna and then we've been broken into twice, maybe some of you have been broken into. Fortunately, we were home neither time. But there is a feeling of violation and intrusion that does go with that. It doesn't feel good. Now, they didn't do any serious harm, and I didn't have to call my then insurance agent and file a claim, because it was under my deductible, or I would have. But it happens. And I was talking to Carol Terry. She was leaving. We got talking. She moved into that place in Lee Summit. She said there's been twice, I think, that people who have robbed homes in Pleasant Hill have come up and parked in her parking lot trying to get away from the police. And they got them last time. But it happens. That's my point. It happens. And who are they going to rob? They're going to rob homes that they think have something in it rather than homes they don't think have anything in it. They just made a mistake on our home because we don't have anything in it. Okay. Thank you. Just a minute. Your husband's coming.
My problem with this then.
Where are you at?
Verse 2.
In Exodus 22.
In Exodus 22.
Go ahead.
If the thief is caught while breaking in and is struck so that he dies, I think there is a difference between trying to shoot him in the leg and shooting him in the chest. I think if you're invaded in the home, you need to try to injure them, but not kill them.
Okay.
Your intention should not be to kill, but to injure.
Okay.
Because it says so struck. And that's what I'm looking at.
Be smitten that he die, yeah. Or be struck, stricken that
so
he die.
So struck that he dies. I think that guiltiness, if he's struck to where he dies, you're not held guilty for that, but I think you should be trying to injure the person. There's a difference between trying to shoot somebody in the leg and shooting them in the chest.
Okay. I hear where you're coming from, and if I'm ever done that, I would hope I would injure them and not kill them. Having said that, they do tell us to, don't pull your gun out if you're not ready to use it.
Yeah.
And probably in the anxiety of the moment, my aim's not going to terribly be great. But having said that, would I rather do what you're saying than kill them? Yes.
Yes, and that's the reason why probably not everyone should carry guns, is because they're more likely, never mind.
Yeah. I agree, not everybody should. And there are people who, irregardless of whether you think it's right or wrong, there are people who just aren't mentally and emotionally suited to carry it, and others are. Others are a little cooler or calmer. I'm not sure which I am, but not having a gun, maybe I think I'm not. I'd rather have a baseball bat under my, and I may die because of that.
I'm going to say that's what I got.
Is that what you got? Okay. And we take precautions. We have locks on our doors. We have an alarm system. I don't care if they take everything in our house. I just want my family safe. So that's why I said, thankfully, none of us were home when they broke. I think I interrupted one of them because they hightailed it out the basement. And we could see their car tracks, and they didn't take very much. So I think I interrupted one of them, but I'm glad I didn't. Does anybody else have a...
If it's in the dark, you don't...
Your husband's coming.
If it's in the dark and say you're in bed asleep and you hear somebody, you don't know if they got a gun or not when they break in.
Yeah, this
sometimes it's in a position where it's kill or be killed.
This is an area of judgment, and we've got to use judgment. But I think Cheryl has a valid point. Our attitude shouldn't be I want to kill them,
no, right.
But they may die. You know, even if you shoot them in the leg, you hit the femoral artery and it's over.
Somebody that did shoot somebody that came into their house, they got charged with killing the person.
Well, I would have to know that.
Even though they broke into that.
I would have to know the details, but I'm pretty confident the castle law gives you the right to protect your castle. Now, maybe there was other things going on there. You know, we can always play footsies with the law and make it say what we want it to say, or make it justify. Let me deal with a couple of other things before time gets away from me. One of them is found in Matthew chapter 5. This is a classic argument against what I kind of just said. That's when in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5, Jesus, and I won't read it all, says, Oh, there it is. I thought it had lost it. In chapter 5, verse 38, it's been said, you've heard an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, but I say, resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek, turn to him also the other. If any man shall sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him also have thy cloak. Well, obviously, those commandments have to be taken in light with other commandments. For instance, if someone wants my coat and I give it to them, it says do it. But if I do that every time, I'm going to run out of coats and I'm not going to be able to provide for my own family. I mean, it's okay if I ask Tom for $50 and he gives it to me. That's fine. But if I do that repeatedly, eventually he's going to run out of money and then he can't provide for his own family, which would contradict 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8. The one that's used most often in terms of a pacifist, and I'm not anti-pacifist, is whoever smites thee on the right cheek, turn the other cheek. In other words, if somebody hits you, just let him hit you again. My best understanding of this is the word right cheek is the key to this interpretation. 85% of us are right-handed by statistics. Well, I'm right-handed, so if I'm going to hit Paul, I'm going to use my dominant hand, which is my right hand. But when I hit him, I'm going to hit him on his left cheek, not on his right cheek. For me to hit him on his right cheek, I would have to go backhanded, which then takes the form of that classic insult. You remember we've seen in Europe, they'd take the white gloves and go like this, and then they'd go out and one of them would shoot the other in a duel. I think this is probably more saying if somebody insults you, slaps you on the right cheek, which would be an insult, then you take it rather than rebut. I don't know that I think this passage really comments on self-defense. Otherwise, I don't know why the right cheek would be so key there, and I don't know how that would fit with other passages. And there are passages where Jesus, one place says, you know, you don't need a sword, but there's another passage where he says, take a sword with you. He doesn't say swords when he says that. So I interpret that as he's saying you're going to maybe need to defend yourselves as you're traveling on the roadside and there's thieves and there's bandits, but I'm not arming you to the hilt so you can go attack. And we know that Jesus' kingdom was not one of aggressive attacking and so forth. So that's my best understanding of that passage in Matthew 5. Let me go to one other before I pause to see if you have any comments. And this is in Luke chapter 3 about serving in the military. Now, the classic place we would go about serving in the military is usually Acts chapter 10, where we have Cornelius, who was a centurion. He was converted. And there's no mention in Acts that tells Cornelius to quit the army. But I think even an equally or maybe even a more compelling argument for that is in Luke chapter 3, verses 12, 13, and 14. In verse 12 it says, then came also publicans to be baptized and said unto him, Master, what shall we do? And he said, exact no more than that which is appointed unto you. And the soldier, now he tells the tax collectors, don't cheat people. Don't take more than, remember that's how the publicans got their money. They would overcharge and then keep the difference. Then in verse 12, the soldiers likewise demanded of him, saying, and what shall we do? And he said to them, do no violence to no man, neither accuse any falsely, and be content with your own wage. I think what was happening there is the soldiers were also using their power to extract money from people. And he says, be content with your own wage. But he doesn't say, quit the army. Because the army does play at a, can play an appropriate role in any society to protect its people. It's a national self-defense rather than an individual self-defense. So I don't see Jesus telling them quit the army. He's saying be honorable tax collectors and be honorable soldiers. Don't cheat people. And I would take that to the police department. And sometimes we hear police departments that defraud the people. Well, that's wrong. Abuse of power is always wrong, whether it's police or military. I've got to move along a little bit to keep us on pace, but I don't find any place in the scripture where it is wrong to serve in the army, nor do I find it, therefore, it would be wrong to serve in the law enforcement agency. Do I want to do law enforcement? No, I don't want to do that. I'm not physically built for that. I mean, I stop someone on 50 highway and I'm 5'8 and they're 6'5. I mean, what's wrong with that picture? They should honor the uniform, but I don't know how much faith I have in that. It's, yeah, that's not my thing, but I'm glad we've got people, because when I need help, I like for them to come, and I have called them on occasion when I needed help. But they're not to abuse their power. Now, if it's not wrong to serve in the military, is it ever wrong to fight in a war? This one becomes more difficult for me. When I was growing up, and probably when Ed and Dave and some of the rest of you were growing up, there was lots of discussions. I had some of them in the basement of this building about is it right to serve in, Vietnam was the war at that time, now it's Desert Storm or wherever they're at. I think there is such a thing as just wars and unjust wars. And a just war would be when we're defending our country. Pearl Harbor. The Nazi invasions. That to me is kind of a clear-cut just war. An unjust war might be one that's just motivated out of greed. And there have been people who have said Desert Storm was a war of greed because if there wasn't oil over there, we wouldn't be... I don't know the answer to that. My dilemma is, and I hope this isn't a cop-out, I don't think I or you often have enough information to determine whether it is a just war or an unjust war. We get our information from the press and from Washington, and I don't have a whole lot of confidence in either one of them, to be honest with you. I'm not trying to be disrespectful of the government, but we know. So as average citizens, I don't know that we have enough information. Therefore, I take the position that if my government called me to serve in a war, and to the best of my knowledge, it was an appropriate war, I would honor my country by doing that. Having said that, it might be an unjust war, and it seems to me at that point the accountability for that war would lie at the feet of the leaders who have initiated that war on whichever side, rather than on those of us that are trying to serve our country and really can't know for sure. Would we not have had Desert Storm and those things if there wasn't oil involved? I don't know. Do I think oil was part of the reason? Yeah, I do. But that doesn't, I just don't know. Some wars are more obvious than others. But we are to honor our nation. And I do honor those who have served in the military. I don't know if we have any here that have had to kill in combat. I know in the past at this congregation there have been people that have had to have done that. We had a couple of members at Smart Road that he's now dead, but Wayne Camp, I know he had to, he didn't want to talk about it, but he served in Europe. And I know that he was a gunner, and he undoubtedly killed people. And it changed him. It changed him forever. I can name people that have been members here that aren't members here now that it changed them forever. When I was a member here in the 70s and 80s, there were a couple of people that came back from the military. They're not in the audience tonight. That I would often look up in the balcony and wonder, I didn't want them to be in the balcony. I'll just put it that way. And nothing bad ever happened, but it made me wonder. There was a look in their eye that caused me to wonder, and I don't see that look in any of your eyes. In terms of our assembly, I have had deacons come to me and say, should we arm ourselves and stand at the back of the building to protect our flock? I've had congregations, officers in congregations say, if anybody comes in, this is Churches of Christ that we fellowship, if anybody comes into ours shooting, they're not going to leave alive. Well, I don't know that that's wrong. I just, you know, you hate to put metal detectors at the door of the church, so I don't want us to overreact. But when I was in Bloomfield 2 months ago, I made a comment to them. I said, we'll probably never have to face any of this. And that very, an hour after I said that, they were killing people in Tennessee. So who knows? Who knows? But we need to worship and we do need to assemble. I do believe we have the right to defend ourselves, but we need to handle that very cautiously. Me personally, I've taken the position I would rather, take the danger of being shot than to shoot somebody that I didn't want to shoot. But that doesn't mean I wouldn't call the police. It doesn't mean I wouldn't have a ball bat. I don't have a ball bat under my bed yet, but it is a interesting thing, you know. Someone kind of tongue-in-cheek today said they didn't want to sit on this side because that's where the drive-by shooters are going to shoot. Well, if you get shot in church, what a way to go. That's kind of like drowning when you're being baptized. You know, what a way to go. I've never known anybody that drowned while they were being baptized, but, you know, that's like playing Monopoly. Go directly to go and get your $200 and you don't have to worry about Park Place in Connecticut. And I don't mean to be facetious, but, you know, it would seem to me to be a good place to die, even though that's not what our humanness wants us to do. Does anybody have a comment or a question before we wrap this up? I just want to give you a chance. I know this is that time, and I've said this before. It's like the teacher says, it's time for recess. Does anybody have a comment? And then there's always some smart aleck kid that has a 10-minute comment, and there goes your recess. So we got to keep things in perspective. Our dismissal time is quite precious. Okay. If you have a concealed weapon, God bless you. Use it judiciously. If you feel the need to get it, I don't think it is anti-biblical. I think it's important how you use it. I do not personally take the position, and this is an opinion, and you know, opinions are the lowest form of intelligence because you never are accountable for your opinion, and it doesn't have to be based on fact. But my opinion is that just making firearms illegal would not necessarily solve our problem. It probably would make it harder for people to protect themselves, but the criminals are always going to get it. Having said that, do I wish nobody had guns that were ever used against another person in our society? Yes, I do. But it's a heart problem probably more than anything else. And so you got to work on it from that standpoint.
What about self-defense?
I think you have the right to
defend yourself sometimes.
You have the right to defend yourself.
Yes.
If someone chooses not to defend themselves, I think they have the right not to, but you have that right. You have that right. And certainly as it relates to our families, and I think most of us would view it that way. You know, if they want to shoot me, okay. No. Not okay. But I'd rather them shoot me than Don or the boys. I think we would all feel that way.
There's a big difference in living by the sword than using the sword.
Okay.
I think Jesus made that distinction a couple different times. So to me, to be a professional, called upon in a professional way to kill as your duty, your way of life is different than self-defense.
And is it in Romans 13 where it says the civil government has the right to, I'm paraphrasing, but I'm pretty sure in verse 4 or 5, they have the right to punish. But that's totally different. That's God-ordained government as opposed to vigilante. And that's where...
And I think the other thing is study the scriptures. Be convinced in your own mind. Don't have a bad conscience about this.
Yeah.
I never was called to kill, but I saw some terrible things that I don't believe the Lord wants us to be involved with. Now, I can serve in the military. I served in good conscience, but it wasn't my duty to kill. And I was thankful for that.
I'm glad you didn't have to.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't have to. But I'm glad there's people who did, and I hope they did it with a good conscience.
Yeah.
And so that's why I say study and be convinced that you're right. I don't think there's a clear-cut answer to any of these questions. There's shades, and it depends where you are in your life, what your experience is.
I'm not trying to cut you off. It's just I have a comment that I don't want to be.
And I'll say one last thing.
Okay.
I think there's a big difference in being taken by surprise and reacting with your instinct for survival, and then there's a difference in I prepare myself to do that.
Oh, absolutely.
So
the difference could be murder versus self-defense.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, in some war situations, there is preparation for killing that I could still, in my intellectual mind, put under the heading of national self-defense, not individual self-defense. But most of us have probably changed our minds more than once. I did not know for sure.
Recordings?
Huh?
So you keep this off recording?
Well, I think take it off. Stop it.
Okay. Are you not going to record anymore?
No. What do you want me to do?
I don't know.
Well, does this button keep me from being recorded?
Yeah.
Okay.